Blog Talk Radio.
Serving up the beats and making it hot.
Making it hot.
It's DJ IQ.
Runway. The Broadway. Shake up. I want to say hello to America, all you people out there across the waters, Midwest, the West Coast, all you people down in the South, all you people up here on the East Coast, hello to everybody and welcome to my show. I am so odd. That intro is so nice. It would have been just how I like to say it, and that was so nice. Thank you to Switchboard. Thank you to Kelly. Thank you to Jasmine. That was really so nice. That was right up my alley, and I had never heard that, so that was cute, real cute. Hi, everybody. Well, first of all, I want to start off to everybody, and if you heard me yesterday and you communicated, please don't judge me, okay? I am only human, and I'm only a person. Some people get the fuck on my nerves. nerves, and some people need to be called out because some people need to be humbled when they're going through their situation. Something that I learned to do, which is why I no longer attack people or do things to people, because I learned to, the things in life just will make you shut up sometime and not put yourself out there to be read or to put yourself out there to be embarrassed, but it still don't make my actions right. And to all you young people and you people that look up to me and you guys that say that I am a positive person, and I am, I truly am, I apologize. I apologize if you felt like I discloses someone's status or discloses someone. I disclosed how I felt. And, you know, you can't back a person up into a wall for too long because, you know, I come from the same place y'all all come from, and we all come from the same place, and we all know how to get down and dirty. So we shouldn't, you know, try not to forget that when we go attacking people and thinking that we're going to get some rocks off to somebody. I am who I am because I chose to be who I am. And nobody can say anything about me because if you are, I'm the one who told you. I am the realest person, and I am not afraid of my own truth. A lot of people are afraid of their truth. And for that reason, you should not enter in on the floor with me. So I want to say I apologize, and I don't, you know, I also say don't come if I didn't send for you, but I don't want to be put out, and I don't want that image to be out about myself. So enough of that. I apologize. I hope you do take my apologies. You know, there will be times you will hear me read again if you try it like that. But for right now, I'm apologizing to you young people and all you leaders and people who are proud of me. I'm sorry. So tonight, you know, this is the For Real Show, you know, my story, my life, my dream. And, you know, I've been interviewing people and pioneers that are in the ballroom scene, just basic to give everybody some history, some perspective of where they came from, what they have done, why they're emotionally tied with the ballroom scene when they come out of nowhere and they're reading or they're telling their opinion about how they feel about today's ballroom scene. So we don't know who they are. Sometimes we disrespectful. We throw a wall up. We don't know this bitch. So this platform right here is to give you an opportunity to get inside of the person who paved the way, to get inside to the person who have laid the bricks down and everything. And I've done Jasmine and Kelly and Junior, and I've done RR, and I'm looking forward to doing a lot of more people. So through the whole winter, we will be going through my whole segment of my life, my story, and my dreams. But tonight, I am about to interview the most controversial rich queen in ballroom history. You see, so this is like, for me, I'm a little bit nervous over here. I got 6 pages of questions, and you people, you get your pens and your papers and your memories together because y'all going to help me come up on this line, because we're going to interview one of the, I'm going to say in to Stewart and Stewart Revlon Ebony. From what I've heard and what I've gone and done my research on, I'm going to say you are the alpha too. You have played and planted seeds in places throughout the states where no one has a thought to. You have been the breadwinner and breaker to the ballrooms built up in many different places. So I definitely want to say, you know, kudos to you. I respect you and I honor you. This is what Stewart doesn't do, interviews. I ask any of you callers, because I will have a time for you guys to call in and get, you know, every 15 to 20 minutes after some questions, you'll be able to call in, pay homage, have a memory, ask a question, or make a statement. But as we all know, Stewart is a very real, realistic person. So I truly say, come respectfully and tread lightly, because I would really hate for it to become a big, you know, thing. He speaks his mind, and if that's what you're looking to hear, that's what you're going to hear. Stewart has played a part in so many different, as far as houses and the openings, and so many openings of ballrooms such as Philadelphia and Atlanta and New York City itself. He's one of the original Butch Queen mothers and have been the mother of the House of Revlon 3 times, and maybe to the House of Ebony. I'm not sure. We are definitely going to find that out. We also have heard a lot of things about Stewart and how they were back in the days. We're going to get into some of them rumbles and places that they don't shut down the ballroom. And there has been a lot of sentiment to real issues that have happened to Stu, and he has lost a lot of friends and stuff in his life. So this right here is a platform where you're going to be able to get how he feel. Ready, girls, don't come trying it with your questions, because he will answer them accordingly. So I want everyone to just make sure you come up here and you all pay homage and you all give some respect to the pioneer icon, Stuart Revlon Ebony. That's to me, because that's, you know, he has such of a making. Next week you can look forward to, Tony will be next. We will have the legendary Ayana. We will have the legendary Ayana Christian come on this line. Now, what I want to make announcement too, and y'all people out there that's listening to me and y'all deal with the different femme queens and stuff on there, please understand that this platform is to pay homage to the ladies. And if there are any icon ladies and femme queens that are in the wings, and you may think that I forgot about, I'm going to need y'all to hit me up, because I don't know how to get in contact with you. I would like to do you, Tiny. I would like to do you, Adrian. I would like to do the phenomenal people of Baltimore and New York City. Where are my ladies? Where are my femme queens? This is an alert. I am looking for Cheyenne. I would like to speak to Vanessa. I want Portia on my show. Candy, where are you? I am looking for the ladies. We need some of the ladies, pioneer icons, y'all out there, to come up on this radio and also, you know, proclaim your spot and solidify your spot of where you stand and what you have also brought to the ballroom scene. So, of course, we're going to go into paying some bills, and we're going to do our commercial. Then we will come back with the song of the pioneer icon, Stuart Ebony, and we will be able to get this shit started. Get your cigarette, get your blunt, or whatever it is that you do, and you come to that phone line, 347-215-6820, or you hook it up to the computer, because this is a show you don't want to miss. So we're going into a commercial now, and then we'll be back with the icon pioneer, Stuart Ebony.
Eva and Deja. Deja and Eva 707 present The Unforgettable Ball Part 3, November 19th, 2011. Over $7,500 in cash prizes. The first time in the Midwest, paying tribute to the ones before us. Grand prizes. Butch Queen's Face, $1,000. Femme Queen's Face, $1,000. Realist with a Twist, $600. Femme Queen Performance, $1,000. Butch Queen Performance, $1,000. Butch Queen Runway, $1,000. Best Dress, $200. Entrance, $25 all night. All tables, $100 up front. $150 at the door. 313 Jefferson Street, Dayton, Ohio. Deja and Eva. Eva and Deja, 007%. The Unforgettable Ball, Part 3.
Okay. Can I please introduce the pioneer icon, Stuart Ebony Revlon? You are now on the For Real Show. Hello?
Hey, what's up?
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm so happy and honored that you're going to come on and do the show. I know how you are and how private your life is and how you do not get into all of this riffraff of things of radio station and everything. So I'm definitely honored that you decided that I can call you up and you can come on and you do the show and do the story, because your story is very, very important, especially your story as far as ballroom and how much you know about where it is and what it was and where it's going. So I definitely just want to pay my homage from me to you and say thank you so much. I feel like this is an Oprah and a Whitney show, like you're not going to do this again. And I'm going to get everything out, and I'm going to get everything from the bad to the good out on the platform. So like I told you, callers, we're here with the pioneer icon, Stuart Revlon Ebony. And if you guys get ready, because when it's time to press one, we got to go through these calls. But so, Stuart, how are you?
I'm good.
And how is Atlanta doing you?
Well, Atlanta's doing me good.
I know you still have that fabulous job that you have working with all the popular white people and stuff in the restaurant. Is that right?
Thank God for that, yes.
Yes, that's good. Okay, so there's a lot of different questions, I got so much that I'm going to be back and forth, so you got to just bear with me from one at a time. But I'm going to first start off and say, tell me about who is Stuart. Where was you born at? And after what school and stuff did you attend?
Actually, I was born in New York. I was born in Harlem Hospital on 135th Street on Lenox Avenue. I was born and actually raised in Harlem.
Okay.
And I went to Junior Richmond High School on 67th Street and 1st Avenue.
Oh, okay. Wow, all of the old girls and, the pioneers went to them type of schools down there, Julia Richmond. I've heard that a lot.
Oh, yeah, well, because we went to school, at that time, a lot of the kids under the ball went to school, for music and stuff, so, and I was in the Talent Unlimited program.
And dancing and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, did you have any siblings and you lived in the house with your mother and your father?
No, I had siblings. I had two brothers and a sister. And I was, raised by, my father passed when I was, three, so I was, real young, so I was raised, just from my mother.
Okay. And what high school did you go to?
I went to Junior Richmond High School.
Oh, that was Junior Richmond. What junior high school? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, junior high school, I went to Frederick Douglass High School. That was called IS-10. That was in Harlem on 149th Street.
Okay, so you was born and raised in Harlem?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Harlem. I lived on 152nd Street and 8th Avenue.
Oh, so you knew all the Harlem girls and the Harlem icons and legends and stuff, up the hill, down the hill, and all that stuff.
That's what my first house was. I had my own house. I mean, I came out with just by a couple of my friends that I, hung out with and stuff. We decided, come out with a house after I had, ventured into the village in 84 and started learning about houses and stuff.
So y'all all basically knew each other from up in Harlem and stuff like that. Okay, well, all right, I can get to that before I get. Okay, so now you grew up in Harlem and stuff. What was your first gay encounter? And how old were you?
I would say 15, going on 16, and my first gay encounter was going to the village.
What about your gay sexual encounter?
Oh, well, gay sexual encounter was in, my last year, probably, in junior high school.
Oh, okay. And what was one of the most loudest, let me go to this one. How was you basically introduced to the ballroom scene? And how old were you? How did that, you went to the village and
I went to the village, and at that particular time, all the ballroom kids hung in Bryant Park. So like coming, you know, going down there, you know, you were, you know, you actually kind of picked up that, you know, just, you know, like they had different cliques and stuff, and then eventually I found out, you know, that they had, they, you know, you saw that certain people had, you know, had the same different last names and stuff, and then you picked up and eventually found out, okay, these were houses and stuff. So that's how I actually learned about houses from going to the village.
Oh, and at what point in time did you feel ready? Like, did you have a friend or something that pulled you into the house? Like, what was your first house? And well, at what point in time in that whole being introduced, was it a year or 2 years later before you jumped into it?
Well, like I said, I started going to the village in 84. Since I went to school, like, for talent and stuff like that, you know, I was always, you know, I was into, like, putting on shows and stuff like that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, so me and my friends, we just came out, we called ourselves the Dorians, and, you know, and then I actually went to my first ball in 85, which was Robbie St. Laurent and Chris St. Laurent's ball that was up at 145th Street, the Bingo Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I kind of like, that's when I really got the visualization of how houses, you know, what
okay,
it was.
Okay,
okay,
that's
really
when you
about,
saw
it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay,
I really, that's when I really saw it, because just hearing about it in the village, you know what I mean? You know, you hear them, you know, you hear them talking, you hear certain names like Omni and St. Laurent and LaBeija Dupree, like you hear these names, but until you actually can visualize and see what they're talking about yourself, you know, for yourself, then you can really see what it was all about. So my first ball going to was, like I said, was Robbie and Crystal's, and that was April 85.
What could you remember about it was that was excited, like maybe a person or somebody that walked, or what was the category that caught your eye that was exciting when you went?
Well, the person that excited me that night out of everybody was Miss Tepper, because I know it was grand prize.
Uh-huh.
And it was something like Russian concept, some shit. And this, I remember that she came out on Shaka Khan's "This Is My Night." And I mean, so when she came in from in the door, and just to see how the ballroom and how everybody in there, just how the whole ballroom just went to pandemonium, people banging on tables and shit. Just her attitude and her presence, like she had, like really just like when she walked in there, like just demanded the whole ballroom. So she was like the first person that I was like starstruck from.
Wow.
And then I had the privilege of actually being asked to come to her house in June of 85.
Okay, so that was your first house that you joined into the ballroom scene, other than the little house that y'all was calling out the Dorians, was the house of Sunshine, LaBeija.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and what was your first category you walked, and did you win?
When I first walked, because I walked Robbie's ball too, and I had walked face performance, and I had walked face. I got physical to ball for both of them, but I didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, once I went to the house of LaBeija. Okay, so that was April 85. I went to the house of LaBeija in in December 85. So the first major ball that I walked was Miss Paris's, and I walked for Marlo's body, and I won Miss Paris.
Oh, so your first category actually winning is not face, it's Marlo's body.
Yeah, it was Marlo's body.
How long did you walk that?
Like 3 years.
Okay. So, how long was you in the house of LaBeija?
I was in the house of LaBeija for 5 years.
For five, so was you considered one of the LaBeija boys?
No, the LaBeija boys came after me.
Oh, okay. And what are some of the people in the whole LaBeija and coming out into the board, what are some of the people that you looked up to?
Well, in the house of LaBeija, I mean, there was actually really two people I really looked up to. One, you know, God bless his name, was Stephen LaBeija, and then the person who actually kind of like really showed me, like, what to do in the ballroom and, you know, explained to me that, you know, okay, well, you know, you don't have to spend thousands of dollars to come to a ballroom and rock it. The ball is all about, you know, your presence, how you present yourself. And all of that came from Miss Candy. Get some candy, LaBeija, candy Kool-Aid.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I love Candy. Hey, Harvester Candy, I love you so much. I love her. So, okay, that was in House of LaBeija. What were some of the idols or people that you looked up to as far as the ballroom scene back then?
Oh, back then it was a whole lot. But actually, you know, of course, Miss Pepper, Miss Paris, Miss Angie, and
okay.
You know, like I said, though, you know, they was, I mean, well, back then when I first came out, you came to see girls, actually.
Oh, okay.
You know,
so, Queens
was, I mean, it wasn't so much of, like, you came, you know, I mean, it was some hot butch queens, but the majority of the bitches that was hot was girls. That's, you came, you paid, I used to go get my tickets in advance because you wanted to see the girls, because you know the girls was going to show out.
Okay.
So, of course, it was the Octavias and the, you know,
okay. Well,
I mean, there's a lot. You know, there's a lot of the girls. Miss Chanel. You can't. Like I said, you really can't even see the girls then. But as far as the boys is concerned, one of my main people who I really looked up to was David Extravaganza Ultimo.
Okay, David Ultima. Kudos. Shout out to David Ultima. I need to get you up here for an interview, too. Hello, if you out there. Okay, so, like, you basically participated in the whole Elks Lodge and all that.
Yeah,
other
I came on the, I came on the, yeah, cause I came on the scene at Elks Lodge in 85. And so from 85 to 90, yeah, I was at the balls at Elks Lodge.
And what were some of the hottest clubs for you back then?
From the hottest clubs.
Yeah.
I've been telling you, the number one, well, I used to love that, a club called Sweats that we used to go to on Saturday nights. That's basically where the ballroom kids went at and they vogued and did all that. That was said that, but my favorite club definitely was Better Days. So.
Oh, okay. Everybody says that. What was that club like? They just all vogued?
Oh, it was
or was
just
it?
Like, when you can't, it was like, just having a club that was all ballroom kids, you know what I'm saying? And this was the place that the ballroom kids, even though you were from different houses, this was you seen where they really got along at, you know what I'm saying? Because this was their environment.
Okay, okay. So Better Days, and is there any more other clubs that you was listening to?
Oh, the Garage, but like I said, I used to love Tracks. I used to love Tracks when it first opened up on 19th Street.
Okay, okay. So you was in the House of LaBeija for 5 years. Now, I know that you play a very significant part with the whole opening of Revlon and Danielle and Tony. Could you take a little bit of time and just tell us about how that whole thing came about? Where were y'all all as people in your life or houses where y'all in, and how did that all come about?
That all came about because there was some, okay, at a particular time, I was given the authority from the House of LaBeija to be the one to be like the recruiter and stuff. So I was the one who was bringing in the new breed, you know, bringing in new people and stuff like that. Because by this time now, I had a name in the House of LaBeija. So, you know, Pepper gave me that authority. Unfortunately, there was, you know, other people who felt that either that maybe I shouldn't have had it or whatever the case should be. So, to avoid any kind of confrontations or whatever, I just decided that okay, it would be best. By this time, I had a ballroom name, so it was like, okay, well, we can go start, start our own house. And just Danielle had came over to the House of LaBeija at this time. So, you know, one day at her job, you know, like I said, since it was so much, like, it was kind of like there may be some discrepancy in the house. So we decided, you know, we'll go start our own thing. So it was myself, Danielle, Jeremiah, and Chris Revlon. And we was up in Show World, and we decided that we was going to open the house. And I was going to just be, like, the overseer. Danielle was going to be the mother. They did not we had not decided on the father.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Revlon approached Tony Revlon, who at that time Tony was in the House of Ebony.
Okay.
And then Tony decided, Tony said yes, and Tony came on board, and that's how the House of Revlon was formed. With Tony being the father, Danielle being the mother, and I was just like the person that was like, was actually going to put it together.
Okay, and what did the House of Revlon, in your eyes back then, stand for? You know, rumors says there's been, I call those myths, has always been that it was, as far as categories, I want you to tell us what it has been, but the rumors has always been that there has been a shutting down, beating the ballroom, shutting down the ballroom type of house. So what would you say the House of Revlon represented back then in that time?
The House of Revlon, the House of Revlon did their thing. It had nothing to do like shutting down balls. It's just that it was a house that you was not going to just, disrespect leaving. You know what I'm saying? We came to the balls and did, shut, because I know we definitely shut the ballroom down as far as trophy-wise was. But when it came to, if you was going to disrespect Linda Revlon, you was going to have to deal with it right then and then. And that's just how it was.
Would that be, so what would you say happened at the Mugler Ball, at the Mark Ballroom, when the House of Revlon shut that ball completely down?
Well, it came to, it was not like it was a beef between the Revlons and the Mugler's, because the Mugler's is one of my favorite houses. I love the Mugler's daily. Mm-hmm. But at that particular time, it came to a point where someone was being very disrespectful to one of the Revlons at that point in time. And it was a whole lot going on that night. I mean, if anybody remember that ball, it was a lot going on that night. And so it's just like one thing led to another, and the ballroom was closed.
I mean, you can tell me it's real awesome, because I've heard some of the stories in it. I'm really kiki at what happened. I ask those questions also to the people and everything. The reason why I asked Stuart up here to take a moment to let y'all know I asked those questions, I want the truth from him, because I want you to know that ballroom didn't just start getting shut down from Tony. It didn't start from that. This stuff has been around for a very long time about the anger and the emotions and the frustration people get and gain when they're in a room and someone is reading or attacking them, or they think it's shade. So this has not been something that the ballroom just gave. This has always been there. You just haven't been there. But now you get to hear the story. So the Mark Ballroom, and I know that there was a couple of other places like in Philadelphia and things like that. So you basically explained that what was y'all not going to tolerate as far as other houses and people that were showing disrespect or shade. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is my whole thing. Okay, I was one of the people who respected, and I respect you as long as you respect me. You know what I'm saying, if it was the point that if I know that you are distinctly out of spite chopping one of my kids or something, okay, I was not one of them mothers to sit back and just let that go. But because number one, I don't feel that that's fair to them, because of the fact is that they paid their money to come up in here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whatever beef or whatever problem you may have with them, I can understand that. But don't take it out on them at the ballroom, and chop them or something, making them feel that, the category that they came for. They was not really coming for that category correctly, when in all fact, you're chopping them because you have a personal problem with them. It's not because they did not bring the category correctly. Yeah, then I would have a problem with that, yes, and I would confront you.
Oh, and depending on how they replied, would
exactly
be determined, okay, on the situation. Okay, so you said that you was started out, and okay, Chris approached Tony. Well, it was said you was the mother of the House of Revlon. How many times
not
did you the
mother? No, at first, I was not the mother at first.
Okay.
Yeah, you was the mother at first. And as time went on, the house felt that Danielle Okay, as far as their needs, okay, what people have to realize is that, okay, when you have these houses and you're the mother and you're the father, some of these kids you really have to be the mother and the father to. Some
right.
of them you really have to be the mother and the father to.
Mm-hmm.
And they come
yes.
to you with all kinds of kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, I was the one that they was always coming to. I was the one who is, if they needed help with the ball, I was the one that was helping them. If they needed, if something went down with them, I was the one who was coming to their aid. Not saying that Danielle did not care or anything like that, but Danielle was Danielle. Danielle was, was into taking care of looking the fab as Danielle. And I had no problem with that because I knew she was going to take care of her, she was going to take care of herself. So it came to the thing that Danielle was the mother, but now Stuart was going to be the acting mother. Stuart was going to be the one to run the house. And that's how that came about.
And how long was you acting mother?
Like 3 years.
So, okay, you acted mother for 3 years, so I did hear this myth, and I forgot this also. Why, when Tony went to jail with him being the father, why did you leave the House of Revlon?
It was so many things going on. It was like, people was being put in that, shouldn't have been there. And so it got to the point where it was like, okay, if y'all gonna, if y'all want to do what y'all want to do, then, do what y'all have to do. I'm not going to be in a place if you're not going to basically listen to what I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel that you know better, you can do it better, then I'm going to hand it over to you so you can do it.
Okay. And so you basically felt like there was just a lot of different things going on and people being put into the house that you didn't approve of.
Yes, because see, I believed in handpicking people that would be in the house. Everybody, because a person might be a friend of mine or whatever, that does not mean that they need to be in the house with me.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? We can still be girlfriends and all that, but that don't mean that you need to be in the house with me, especially if there's a certain kind of image that you're trying to set for your house. Everybody is not going to fit that image.
Okay.
So when it started being like that, it was like, okay.
So that was that.
Let y'all do your thing.
So when you left the House of Revlon and you stepped down as mother, what house did you go to then?
Really, no, but I just did my own thing. At one time, I helped bring out the House of Elite.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then after that, I think I went, that's how I went to Ebony.
And this whole time, we also know, I don't want to get past that, you were the rocking face, magazine face, face and morph face diva for many, 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 many years. And you rocked the ballroom upside down. You burned me. What is one of the fabulous nights where everybody was there and that you came out and you shut the ballroom down and snatched grand prize?
Well,
that you can remember.
I mean, shit, I had a lot of nights.
I know. I've been there a couple. But if you had to say, what would give you one of them, you felt that, all of this stuff.
I really felt that I had a really good time with Eric Bazaar's ball of the night when I came with God Bless the Dead on Christian Milan.
Yes, I was there. I remember that.
you brought your understudies.
Yes.
That was one of my really favorite nights, and I think the night out in Jersey when I came with Joey Caron, I had fun with introducing other people onto the scene.
Right, that's my next question to you. Who were some of the people as mother, as steward, you know, La Beja, Revlon, and now being at Ebony, who were some of the people that you brought to the ballroom scene?
Okay, well, okay, some I brought, some I, they came into the ballroom scene, but then they got under my guy. Then I actually put them up under my wing. But of course, anybody knows Andre. Andre, Sean and Roy, me and Tony together brought people like James, Letitia, and Keisha. I brought Jay Blonick. Man, Prodigy, even though Man was not right, you know, he came out as the St. Clair stuff first, but then when I took him up under my wing and he was the father of the house of Ebony in Philadelphia, I worked with Man. So, you know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of people in the ballroom scene that I basically, you know, worked with.
Okay, all right. So, you know, it's winding down to it's 12:15. You call us that are on the phone line. This is my show, the For Real Show, my life, my story, my dream. I am interviewing the pioneer icon, Stuart Revlon Ebony. If you have any questions, pay homage, or any statements that you would like to say, you guys can all get ready to press 1 any memorable times. Please be respectful, thread lightly, and ask what you really want to know. You know, that's one thing I want to say to that. So, of course, I think I'm going to just take it in. I'm going to pay some bills because we got to let's pay some bills. This show can't go on like that. I'm going to pay some bills, and any of you callers that are out there and that y'all have something that y'all want to come on and take a moment because I don't want to keep going and y'all just forget what you have to say, definitely press 1 and we can get y'all in and we can go on and continue with my interview. So let's go and pay some bills.
Cut.
Eva and Deja. Deja and Eva 707 present The Unforgettable Ball Part 3, November 19th, 2011. Over $7,500 in the cash prize. The first time in the Midwest, paying tribute to the ones before us. Grand prizes. Butch Queen Face, $1,000. Sun Queen Face, $1,000. Realist with a Twist, $600. Sun Queen Performance, $1,000. Butch Queen Performance, $1,000. Butch Queen Runway, $1,000. Best Dress, $200. Entrance, $25 all night. All tables, $100 up front. $150 at the door. 313 Jefferson Street, Dayton, Ohio. Deja and Eva. Eva and Deja, 007 present. The Unforgettable Ball, Part 3.
Okay, we're back. Just like I said, hi, everyone, everybody that's out on the phone lines. This is tonight is the For Real Show, and we are interviewing the pioneer icon, Stuart Revlon Ebony. If you're on the phone lines, you have a moment, a testimony, anything that you would like to pay homage to him, he's here. He doesn't do this much. Press 1. My first caller, Keisha, welcome to the For Real Show. Hi, girl. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. What's going on?
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
How are you doing, baby?
Good. It's nice to hear from you, and it's nice to hear another icon legend who's given us the history of the ballroom community. And my question to you, I don't know too much about you. I haven't seen you. I know you are an icon or you're a legend. I think you're a little more before my time. But my question to you is, based on what you've seen the ballroom scene when you were coming up until now, do you think that we have a long way to go? Do you think that we're moving in the right direction? Do you think we need a lot more mentoring? What's your outlook? What's your opinion? What's your feedback on the ballroom scene now compared to it was when you were coming up?
Okay, the ballroom scene now, I mean, don't get me wrong. I feel that there is still a whole lot of talent in the ballroom scene. It's just, I think there are some wrong people directing it.
Uh huh.
You know that. I mean, I think that that's one of the problems, you know, coming in at, because now the ballroom scene is really, 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 like, girlfriend-ish, not so much like, you know. I mean, because I've been to so many balls lately that, I mean, like, the people who did you know that should have won did not win. You know what I'm saying? Or you at the balls where, you know, a category is, you know, a person done won, but now y'all come back, y'all change the category, and the person who had won now has lost. So it's like a whole lot, you know. I think the direction that it is going to, I think it definitely needs to be shaped up a little bit. It needs to be more to where, like, more of the mentors do need to step in and get a little bit like more to how it, you know, is supposed to be, to where it's more of it being fair. Because right now it's not too fair.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess I could agree. I definitely can agree when you say it in those terms. All right, Keisha, do you have any other questions that you would like to ask the Pioneer Icon?
What's your favorite categories?
My favorite category right now still kind of is Fem Queen Face.
Okay. Oh, kudos to Fem Queen Face.
Oh, it's a real question. I got a question for you, Stuart. What's your definition of a perfect 10? Can you please tell me?
What is my definition of a perfect 10? Perfect 10 is supposed to be a person who has face, body, and they are real.
So if they're oversurged, is that considered a perfect 10?
If they are oversurged, then no, that's not a perfect 10.
Thank you.
If they're oversurged.
Okay, well, you heard it. Thank you, Keisha, for coming on my show. Thank you very much. Thank you. No, because, you know, I got to go on with my interview. It's a lie. I'm not trying to be rude. Don't even take it. Thank you. My next caller is 404-254. You're live on the air.
Hey, what's going on, Nicole? What's going on, Stuart? This is Hassan.
Hey, what's
up, Hassan? How are you?
I'm fine, I guess, bro. I had
I'm
a call face
so
a while ago. I'm out on the street. I remember that y'all was doing an interview right now. But I wanted to call and pay homage to Stuart. You know, I love you. I talk to you all the time. And I've been knowing you since about 91, 92. And I thank you for a little bit of things that you instilled in me, even still to this day. So, you know, you always get that utmost respect from me. But I don't really have no questions because I talk to you often enough. So,
but you just paying homage. That's right. But you just paying homage. That's why I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, they had to come out the club.
Let me tell you about it. It would have been really over if you'd have paid homage and you knocked on my door and dropped a piece of the white lady.
Y'all going too far already into my interview. I have to ask the question, Grandma. Come on, Stuart. Hold on. Thank you. I'm sorry for calling in, paying homage to all of that. Yeah, thank you. So when you can't move faster than I'm going.
I'm sorry.
The next caller I have on the air is 917-345. You're live on the air. That's the Icon.
Hello.
Letitia Revlon. I love you. Thank you for listening to the show.
Stuart, I don't have any questions for you.
I just wanted
to come and say I love you and hello, and thank you for all your guidance that you've given me throughout, you know, everything. And thank you for having, like, belief in me in the beginning as well, too. So I just thank you.
Okay, of course, because I knew you was one of the girls that would do it. All the girls can't, you know, all the girls can't do it, but I knew you was one of the girls that could do it, and regardless of, I know I took you through some hard times, too, but like I told anybody, because y'all know I ruled with an iron hand. I mean, I read the bitches that was in my house, too. To let them realize, okay, bitch, listen, if you're going to get any reads, you got to hear it from me than hear it from the motherfuckers out the street. Because hearing it from me, you know, I'm telling you because I care. The ones out the street, they don't give a fuck about you. And that's why half of the, you know, the half of the kids that became stars, I mean, became legends and icons from the House of Revlon and stuff, because that's how, I mean, that's how we were with them. That's how we were with y'all.
Tough love.
Yeah,
it was tough love.
I love you too, Nicole.
I love you. Thank you so much for listening to my show. You have anything else?
What are you so much giggling at? I mean, what is so funny?
Tammy told me to send you a message and tell you to get off. If she would have had called, then she would have told you to get off the radio.
Oh, she wanted to tell me to get off the radio? Tell me, as soon as I get the radio, I will be calling her house and cussing her out. So I can get ready for it.
Oh, thank you, Letitia. Thank you so much, Kathy, for calling in and listening. My next caller is 770-599. You're live on the air. 770-559. You're live on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Hey, what's up? You're live on the For Real Show.
What's up? This is Lil Tay Ebony. I'm just calling to co-sign what Hassan Ebony said. Stuart, we love you, and we thank all the things you've done for this house and all the things that you will continue to do for this house.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Tay, for Ebony, for calling in. Thank you all for pressing one and paying homage. Of course, we have on the line. Thank you for calling in, and we'll put you back on hold. Of course, we have on the line the icon, father himself, James Icon.
Hello, y'all. What's up? I'm just calling to say hi to my mother, Stuart. And, you know, just listening to the radio, listening to everything, and it's good to hear you.
What's up, James?
What's going on?
Yeah, I know you want to read me, honey, but don't read me on the radio. Let me call you later, and then you can read me.
I'm not going to read you on the radio. I'm just calling to pay homage. That's all.
What is up, baby?
What's up? Chilling. I'm waiting for you, you know, to start with your tongue lashing on the
internet. Y'all are so fierce, honey.
I wanted to ask you a question. I know I got the right questions coming all day. Trust me, I'm just warming it up. We have to be warmed up. But let me ask you something, Father. Can you name a time when you were in the building? I asked him what he said about that Mark Boy. I remember that day. He totally shut down the building for you, and you couldn't take it no more.
Yeah, when we was in tracks and he came to tracks, he got a phone call that Letitia and Melissa was fighting, and he came to tracks in a cab from the other club and said, all of the Revlons out. Yeah, he shut down the building that night.
Well, was that not serious?
Yes. And then Chris jumped up that cab and said, all the Revlons out. We was in tracks jamming. Out. Oh, he shut down the building. Yeah, but no, Stuart had many nights where he, I used to love to see Stuart do walk runway and stuff. When he would walk runway, or when they would convince him to Vogue or something, like facial performance and stuff like that. He used to really eat it, like, especially when he would do his team things, like he said, with Joey and all of them. He used to really, really turn it. He was really good with the house production and stuff. You know, when Tony Malone was a Revlon in the beginning, too, and stuff like that, and Jeremiah and them, the Revlon boys, they used to eat it for faces and house and stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, do you have anything else to say to your mother, Stuart?
No, I love you, and I'll be calling you soon.
Yeah, I love you, too. Yeah, thank you for having that much respect, and wait to read me after.
Okay, and this is our next caller, and then we're going to put it on pause, and I need to go into my interview because y'all all got these questions y'all want to hear. But my next caller now on the line is 443-570, back away from your computer.
My best friend didn't call me and say, look, I'm sorry.
Hello, 443-570. Private caller, you're live on the air. Private caller, you're live on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
What is up, Nicole?
Hi, Grandpa. How are you? This is another pioneer icon, Tony Revlon. Dear friends. Hi, Grandpa. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up? Hey, Stu.
What's up, Tom?
And I love you. I love you. And I thank you. I thank you for opening up this house. I really, really love you from the bottom of my heart. And I know we have been through our shit, but deep inside, you know I love you, okay?
You know I love you, too. You know that.
Okay. But I'll let y'all get back to your interview. But
Grand I'm yours book. Is next week, right? So you do know that, right?
I'm book.
What do you mean you
oh,
book?
Oh, work.
What do you mean you book? We'll discuss that, Grandpa. I know you book, darling. I
wish you booked. I wish you hurry up and I wish you get to a question about these icons.
I'm going to get to those questions. Y'all got to get me in there. All right, thank you, Grandpa. I love you so much for listening to the show. Okay, we're going to put a hold on my callers and stuff right now. So we're going back into my interview. Of course, we just finished going from the Revlons, and now we're just moving up to date and everything. We're coming forth in the 90s. Now, there was a part of the time in the 90s where you were gone and stuff, and a lot of people speculated that you was on drugs and you were strung out and you didn't even come out and walk the balls. You know, one of the last balls I seen you walk was at the Mark Ballroom when you walked Magazine Face with God Bless Today, Christian Milian. So where were you and what were you doing around that time in your life? What happened? Like, where were you at?
Oh, I had moved to Philly, so I just wasn't in New York.
Okay, so you lived in Philly. And did you have an involvement with the whole Philadelphia ballroom scene that exploded out there as well?
Yeah.
Okay, could you tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, when I went to Philly, okay, well, actually, I was going back and forth to Philly. Anyway, as a LaBeija, I used to go back and forth to Philly. I was introduced to a friend through Candy named Lisa, who eventually they had formed the House of Excellence in Philly, her and Raphael. And then the guy named, rest in peace, named Michael Gastins, who had a House of Onyx, he threw a ball in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to Philly in 92. And when I moved there, you know, they already had, you know, their ballroom scene was coming up. And then, you know, basically, like, once I was there, that's what made the kids from New York start coming to Philly. And then the balls in Philadelphia became one of the big, you know, the balls in Philadelphia was just as big as the balls in New York. At one time.
And what house was you in when you were living in Philadelphia?
Oh, Ebony.
You were still in Ebony. Okay. So how long did you stay there in Philadelphia?
I stayed in Philadelphia for 5 years.
Okay, 5 years. And then you in 5 years. And was you still walking phase, or was you still participating and walking the board?
I was still walking from time to time, but the majority in Philly, I was... you know, basically, like, running the House of Ebony. Like, basically, like, you know, making sure the David's out there getting names or something.
Okay. So now, of course, you know, there's lots of rumors and speculating, and you can see, and we all know that you're not ashamed of it. When would you say the whole drug thing and stuff started for you, and what was your drug of use, your drug of choice, excuse me?
Okay, the drug thing, y'all, you saying that like a bitch was a fucking drug addict.
I'm sorry. No, I didn't say that. I'm saying just when did the whole thing just start, you know, the whole drug use and what's your choice of drug? I'm sorry.
I mean, the AIDS, I mean, not trying to be funny. I mean, I was doing cocaine at age 16. I mean, in the House of LaBeija. I got in the House of LaBeija because that was, I mean, back then that was the thing. The kids did cocaine. You had... Some people, you know, would smoke weed, but the big thing back then was cocaine. So, I mean, and, you know, that's, you know, what I was doing. But, you know, and even though that was what I was doing, but I never let it, like, take over. You know what I'm saying? I still went to work and did all, I mean, still went to work. Well, at that particular time, I was still going to school and stuff like that. So, I mean, I did not like it. It's not like it took over my life, whereas, you know, I couldn't work, and I wasn't going to school, and so, no, it was never like that.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. So now you have that you lived in there. Let me ask a question. I mean, people want to know, forever. You was actually seen on Paris is Burning. Did you get any money for Paris is Burning or was a part of that?
No, because
I'm negotiated.
No, I didn't, because first of all, that year, as you walk in the ballroom, they have release forms for you to sign. You know, if you wanted to be a person, you know, who wanted to be a part of the movie or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? And it so happened that I had clips in it, but no, and you know what I'm saying? I wasn't looking for no money from, you know, for that. You know, that just so happened that I had to be, I was there at that time when the camera rolled around.
Okay. All right, all right. So that's, and so you basically didn't really give anything from that at all.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you about that. Well, how do you feel about the mothers today in ballroom scene? The ballroom scene, the mothers today, and how are they so different from the mothers of yesterday?
Okay. The mothers of yesterday actually, to me, more like nurtured and, to me, show more like they cared for the kids that was in their house.
Mm-hmm.
The mothers today, what is it? Okay, so you have different kind of mothers now, and that's the problem today. Y'all have these trophy mothers. A trophy mother and a mother is are two different things. The trophy mother is basically a mother that has already been established, made her name known. Y'all only need to see her every once in a while. She really does not have to come to a ball, but y'all know when she come, she's going, you know, she's coming, cause she's going to already have it together, because that's the kind of bitch she is.
Mm. Okay.
And now these mothers today are making this, you know, making mothers, okay, first of all, number one, they have no ballroom knowledge at all, and if you are a person who have no ballroom knowledge, how are you gonna teach your house? How are you gonna teach your kids what to do? How are you gonna tell them how to walk this category if you yourself don't know? If you yourself have not experienced it, how are you gonna teach it to somebody else?
Okay. And the mothers, are you aware of some of the mothers today? Who do you think that shouldn't be a mother today of a major, of big houses? And give me two people that you think that should not be in a position of a mother today.
That I'm not even going to give that.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm not going to give that, because that would be, because that's, you know, that would be, you know, that that would be me like actually like being really personal.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, this is our person. We just asked her how you feel. So we're going to my other question now, too, is, okay, it's been a lot, and one of the times that you have came back into the scene and you came back and you went to Roy Bourne and you deemed Roy icon, you know, a lot of people's under the assumption is because, you know, and we all know that because you felt that the people that were being deemed legend and icon was a mockery. And as far as ballroom, they had not done anything in ballroom. So how do you feel about some of the legends and icons? Well, let's start with the icons. How do you feel the people that are placed in the seat next to you who feel having a status to have done what you have done? How do you feel about them people, and who do you think should not be an icon? And I need the real, I mean, listen, those callers, this is what these questions come from them, grandmother, by the way. So you need to understand, okay? So,
listen.
Come on. Okay. Come.
There's a whole lot of them
that
shouldn't be icons. You know what I'm saying? So for me just to say two people when there's a whole bunch of them, then you know what I'm saying? Let me just put it like this, okay? First of all, we should know what an icon is. People should know what a legend is and what the status.
No, but we don't know. We want to know from your terms. You know, you have an opinion. We're not going to sit here and booty pop it around. This is why I called you, Grandma, because you set this straight and said it real. I didn't ask you to go into a whole bunch of people, but we want to just know. You sit here. You know, what are your beliefs and what an icon should be? And who are two people that shouldn't be one?
Okay, well, an icon. icon should definitely be a person who automatically, the mention of their name, you automatically know who they are and what they have done and what contributions they have made into the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the number. That's the number one thing. And all the person has to have been somebody who has been out. You have to be a person that has been out for at least 10 to 15 years, and in those 10 to 15 years, you know, you should have, you know, really have done your thing. So, it's hard to say who shouldn't be when there are so many there are that should not be.
Well, if you had to give me two, would you give me two? Would you like? I mean, this is my show. I'm here to interview you. I don't need to have to call a name or two to get your attention. Would you like to? The people would like to know, your listeners and all the people on the phone line and your daughters and kids would like to know two that you do not see being sitting next to a throne and as yourself. And this is just your opinion, need I say, to the whole world and everybody that's listening. We all have one. They didn't like my blonde hair, and they said I look fierce at the ball. I was sitting Monday to Tuesday at Vogue night. That's everyone's opinion. So this is your opinion, and you should have the right to express it. Two.
Okay, well.
It shouldn't be hard because you said there's so many. We have lots of more questions, and I get hot. So,
I understand what you're saying, but I'm trying to. I really cannot answer that.
Okay, you don't want to answer that. Okay, well, see, y'all people said I was next, right? He does not want to answer that. So next, you know, question. I'm moving on with the next question. How do you feel about the ballroom commentators today? And how they have changed the ballroom feed?
Well, with the commentators, the commentators are going off of things that basically, like, that they have heard that they really don't know. And the commentators are the ones that basically have, have given the statuses that are out now. So they have come from the commentators. And, you know, no one basically has said anything. So, you know, basically, I think, you know, the commentators is one of the main reasons why there are a lot of the four statuses that are out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So definitely the commentators does have basically are in charge of the direction that the ballroom has seen.
Oh, yeah, because when they do, because a lot of, okay, the kids come to the ball now, they go on what they hear the commentators say. When it comes to the star statements and legends, they go on with the commentators. Okay.
Mm.
And I'm saying, and I have been at balls and heard people being called legendary and stuff, and you just sit there and just like actually kind of like just gag and, you know, say to yourself, you know, well, how did that happen? But like I said, they have let it go on so long to that, you know.
Amen. Right. Right.
I hear what you're saying.
Right, you're not going to be the one to his name. Of course, a lot of people wait for this interview, and I didn't want it to appear like that, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but you got all these questions, and everybody want to ask you whatever. But I'm going to ask you this, though. Because of your non-belief of the people that are inactive, and I'm active and as running it as far as being icons and legends and stuff, is that what have stopped you from being a part? I mean, to really taking the umph like you used to do and all the things that you have put, you know, out there and have built and, you know, helped play the big part in. Is that the reason why you just stopped it all?
Oh, yeah, in a way, because you get to the point where it's, okay, how are you going to call, if you're calling somebody, okay, first of all, because number one, I did not name myself anything. I did not. When I got the legend, when they named me up and coming and legendary and all that stuff. None of that stuff I asked for. I wasn't calling people asking them, oh, when is my time coming and none of that kind of stuff. It came when it came. They called me. You know, they called me there from what I had done. So, of course, I will get, you know, I'm kind of insulted when you call somebody an icon and I know that they did not do half of the shit that I, you know, that I did. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, pay it. You know, my whole thing is this, just as long as, you know, it don't come to the point where, you know, we have to lay our credentials down, because then I know right then and then a lot of them is not going to be able to hang.
I like the way you said that. I like that was a more professional people. Y'all people are gagging. Y'all didn't expect this. Okay, but you could answer this. Who do you feel should be an icon and have been looked over?
Who do I feel should be an icon and has been looked over? Well, I do know one person that I know they have not called the icon, and that is Gramps Mugler, Eric Mugler.
Mm-hmm.
Because Eric has been in the scene for many years and has brought many a kids to the scene. As kids don't even know, she's the reason from his Argené and them too. When I met him, he was a army. He was known for executives. Where and all that kind of stuff, and I know he is one of the people who I know they have not deemed him an icon, and I know that he has definitely done more than some of the people who they have deemed it, who they have given it to.
Okay, well that should be something that everybody could, you definitely can make happen, right?
That I can make it happen, but you know I don't know, look, you know. They go by so many different rules. You know, one minute it's supposed to be a group of people who come up with this, and the next minute it's people doing it on their own because they feel, okay, well, I'm an icon, so I can make this person this. You know, because, see, that's another reason why a lot of people got a lot of them statuses. And a lot of the statuses came out of spite. Oh, because you made this person an icon. Okay, so now I'm going to go do this because you didn't ask me.
And do you think that with the whole situation, do you think that there's a solution to the problem, that, or do you think that it's just going on for so long that there's no way in hell you can get everybody to, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger as the foolishness keep going. Do you think there could ever be a solution behind getting a structured boardroom analysis or alliance or boardroom scene?
The only way that it's going to stop is that if they get an alliance together, but they're going to stick to what they, you know, they're going to stick to what they say. Because my whole thing, what I'm saying is that we all know what it takes to become whatever status it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But you know, we have, you know, because we have girlfriends or children or whatever. A lot of those people we have pushed through because those are our kids or whatever the case should be. I'm just a firm believer in that if you did not do it that way, I'm not gonna put it out there like that, like you did. Regardless of whether me and you hang together, you can be my best girlfriend. We can talk on the phone all every fucking day. But if I'm on the microphone, I'm not gonna call you the legendary so and so when you ain't did shit in the ballroom.
Okay. So would it be safe to say that you wouldn't come to a table with a bunch of people that you think have no credentials?
I wouldn't come to the table with somebody?
Basically, to work with them, to come to a conclusion, you know, a solution, or to even on demon and things. Is it safe to say that you're not willing to work with people that you have no recollection of or, you know, reason of them even being there?
Okay, well, I can't come to a table. Well, I wouldn't come to a table with someone that would not be on the same order that I am. Because, okay, what are we getting ready to discuss? I'm not trying to be funny or anything, but I mean, what are we going to discuss? You going to tell me what? You going to tell me, oh, I got one trophy, and I'm going to tell you I got 500. So what the hell are we getting ready to discuss? We're getting ready to talk about what?
Okay. Well, we'll be sure that one. Okay. Okay. So, you basically saying that it would take a lot of work to bring back this ballroom scene or to have some real structure going on.
No, they need to go back to the, rules and regulations what the ball rules and regulations were to where your status is. What makes a star? What makes a statement? What makes a person up and coming? What takes them to being legendary? And then what takes them from being a legend to being an icon? That's what they need to go back. That's what they need to go back to. Okay, and my whole thing now is that it's going, everybody's gotten to the thing that is so much that, okay, how much this person has won a ball. One of the things that we have gotten, that they've really gotten from when it comes time to give these statuses, is what are y'all counting? What are they like counting as major balls? See, there are so many balls, but all balls are not major.
Mm.
And they have really gotten away from the major, like which balls are major, which are the balls that count. You got your statuses from the impact you made in the ballroom. Not so much, the trophy wins, because nowadays, people are winning trophies, but they ain't winning over nobody.
Or they don't even deserve it.
Or even that. But, a lot of them, I'm telling you, I've especially here in Atlanta, I've gone to how they choose their winner of the year. They would take a person that won one time, and you call them of the year winner. Of the year winner is not no bitch that won no one time. That just means, bitch, you won one time of the year. That you ain't no of the year. You won one time. That's it.
Okay.
How would you be of the year if you cannot be compared to no one? How are you of the year? Yeah, you won the category one time, and that's, congratulations. But to say they won of the year meant that out of 12 balls, you at least won 6 that year. That's of the year.
Okay, so basically a lot of the year shouldn't have been happened then. Okay, so I got one more question as far as the icon thing, and then I want to go back into your history of face. But if you had a Vogue Femme, I'm going to say a Vogue Femme, you've seen all the Vogue Femmes, if you notice, there are none legendary Vogue Femmes from back when you were around, the Vogue Femmes that you would remember, there are none that are deemed icon. Which one would you deem icon?
Oh, without any shadow of a doubt, would be Miss Eugene
Malone. Okay.
When Eugene came on the scene, Eugene stirred the ballroom up. You know what I'm saying? You had a lot of people, but he was one of the ones that you automatically took notice to. He came to the ballroom stocking it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I've been there a couple of nights. Eugene ain't no scamp.
Little Eugene is the carry.
So is it safe to say that a lot of other people, as far as like Shay Shay Taif and all the people that you were out there, I can name even a couple of femme queens like Cheyenne and a lot of people that you witnessed in their history, is it safe to say that they were overlooked as far as being an icon and that they're still being called legendary with the legendary kids today?
Okay, but you gotta realize a lot. Okay, then you gotta go on, how long did they stay out walking?
Well, they come in and out. I think everybody I pretty much named Kaz came in and out and has been around a long enough time to solidify an icon status, especially when you're talking about as far as ballroom, and then when you talk about the dislikes of what you feel about ballroom today. And who's deemed icon and legend. So
Let me go back on something real quick.
Okay.
Because see where I think is a lot of confusion is coming in on too. Okay. Now when they're deeming these people, see there's a difference from being a legend legendary for your category, or y'all talking about the deeming of a person being a legend, period, in the ballroom? Because see, a lot of those kids that you're naming, I consider them to be legendary for their categories, but I would not say that they are an overall legend in the ballroom, because I don't feel that they stay out long enough like that in their categories, or stay out long enough in the ballroom for you to say that they are a ballroom legend.
Okay. Okay. That's the last of my icon questions. Any of you callers out there who, a lot of you guys and Stuart, a lot of people look for your insight on how you feel about what's going on in the ballroom today, even a lot of the leaders and your peers look for your insight and for your public announcement about how you feel about the things that are happening in the ballroom. So those questions are necessary. And for anybody else that wants to ask Stuart and you want to ask him a name and you want to come and you want to put it, you see, he's not looking to do that. But if you have a question and you want to come and you ask as far as that, you are welcome to press 1 and you will be brought on this line to ask any question or to call out anybody's name that you would like. But he has not decided to disclose anyone. So if you ask a question, you're going to get an answer. I'm moving on from the icon and the legend thing. So now, Stuart, you, I love the fact you've walked face and everything. Name some of the people that you battled out there and has won over you. So let's say what you name. You've won over a lot of people. Name some of the people that would come and would win over you. You would have a hard time with. They would just win over you.
Oh, of course. You know, definitely one of my number two rivals that were actually who definitely win over me. Well, we had our wins over each other, but who definitely went over me was Ira and Whitney.
Ira and Whitney. Okay. Did y'all battle a lot?
Oh, we battled all the time. Those is my like at one time those is my main two rivals, that Whitney and Ira. And the thing about it, and we always, you know what I'm saying, we battled and we always kept it, you know what I'm saying, we always maintained to be cool off of the ballroom, so we knew how to flip it once we came off the ballroom floor. You know, no hard feelings, no congratulations, bitch, I'll see you next time.
Right. Right, okay. And what are some of the faces that you live for, like that you battled, that you just went up for as being, you know?
I lived for both of them. I lived for Ira. I lived for Ms. Whitney. When I first came out, I lived for Ms. Michael Dupree. I lived for Michael Princess. I lived for Steven, the new kids. I lived, God bless the dead, for Christian Milan.
Okay.
Then there's new kids on the block now I live for, I live for the kids from the House of Mugler, the father from father of the House of Mugler from Atlanta. I mean it's a lot. I have no problem with paying homage to those that deserve it. I've never been one to to not be like, oh, I don't see this person and all that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, if you got it, you got it.
Okay. And could you just take a moment and give us a list of all the houses that you've been in?
The LeBages, the Ebony's, the Elites, and the Milans.
Okay, the Milans. And you was, those are the LeBages, the Elites, and the Milans. Is that conclude in the Ebony's and the Revlon?
Oh, I didn't say the Ebony's and the Revlon?
No, you didn't. No, okay.
The Ebony's and the Revlon.
Okay, so all you girls are on the phone line, you know, I think I usually get a lot of more what's name and hit ups. They are frightened, or you girls are sending me questions over through that. I want you to call in. This is a radio show. This is a live interview. Your question is a question. Your opinion is in your opinion, and how you feel about a situation is a situation. We are free of speech, and we did that years ago. So we're entitled to feel how we feel. You are not, you don't have to be afraid to press 1. press 1, come on this line. You stop sending me over answers and questions and asking this, and come and address the Pioneer Icon Steward, Revlon Ebony, yourself. And it will show a much more respect, you know? You guys need to pay homage and stand on your feet. This is a person that's been around and has made it, basically put the new concrete to the floors, that to the ground that we're walking on today. And we need to pay homage. And if you have any questions or something you want to be acknowledged about, then you come on this radio and you say something. Okay, my first caller is 410-963. You're live on the For Real Show. What's up?
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, how you doing?
Stuart, as a pioneer and icon, and you said it's your favorite category with film queen face, can you name one of your all-time favorite film queen face battles? And who was one of your all-time favorite film queen face divas from the past and from the present?
One of my all-time favorite face divas from the past was Zendaya Gale. And the reason why I say that is because Zendaya Gale was not the most beautiful, was not the most prettiest film queen, but she knew when she put it all together and came to that ballroom, and she would be beautiful. So she was definitely one of my favorites from the past. One of my favorites in the present right now, I would have to say Dee Dee Chanel.
And what was one of your all-time favorite film queen face battles?
Oh. Now, one of my all-time favorite face battles was a long time ago. Was at Miss Palace Ball in 1987 when Miss Octavia St. Laurent came as the Virginia Slims girl.
Oh, that's the clip on Paris is Burning.
Yeah, she has on the white with the short, and she stands in the chair. That was a really, 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 really hot night.
Okay, thank you. And I pay homage to you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa, for calling in. Thank you very much. Anyone call us that's on the phone line and you have something to say, you'd like to pay homage, your respect, statements, questions, or anyone looking for some answers, press 1. Feel free to press 1 and get yourself up on this line, and we can get this on the roll. There's no more. Okay. So, Stuart, So now we have you walking these balls and you're doing this and you're doing that. All right, first, my question, like what Lisa just asked, is was you there the night at, I think it was Eric Ball when Danielle cut her hair short and she came out in the black and Neil brought her out?
I'm the one who had her come like that.
I watched that over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah, I'm the one who had her come that way because I told her she had to do something different. I was like, okay, I'm telling you, girl, you might have to do something different. So I went to a nail. I was like, look, bitch, we cutting that bitch hair short. She about to come with a short haircut.
Okay.
And that's how that all planned. Yeah, but I was the one who suggested for her hair to be cut short.
Oh, my gosh, she looked amazing. That was,
that was one of the most pandemonium nights for face that had ever been in the ballroom.
Yes.
Yeah, them bitches took 15 minutes. Calm down. Exactly 15 fucking minutes. The bitch stood in the middle of the ballroom while the bitches went off.
Yes. And it was so over.
And see, that's what you call. See, that's the makings of a bitch that you go. That would be an icon. Or when you have moments when you stir up a ball like that. That's the kind of moment.
Yes, I love when she took off them glasses and she turned her face to that left and she smiled. It was to the right, and it was just no more. It was that is one of my
favorite
moments.
That's one of my favorite moments in the ballroom as far as in New York. And one of my other favorite my favorite moment was Miss Octavia. Then that night with Miss Letitia in that fish tank was a hot ass moment in New York too.
Yes, cheesecake. Yes, that was definitely hot. Okay, what type of, tell us something about your relationships. Like, what type of, do you go with butch queens? Do you date femme queens? Do you like straight guys?
I only date butch queens.
You date, and what type
that's
of butch queens do you like?
I'm a butch queen, so that's what I date. I don't go out of my league. Don't get me wrong. I love the girls to death. Love them. But I don't mess with the femme queens. If that's gonna be the case, then I will go with a woman. I want to sit a gay male.
And what type of butch queens do you like?
Oh, definitely ones that you know, of course they have, you know, have take of a look to them, you know what I'm saying? We don't play with the beasts.
Okay. Do you like a masculine, feminine, you know, it's maybe a couple of people out there looking at you.
No, the ones that act, you know, they act like, I mean, you know, they act like boys. I mean, it's not so much, you know, you got to be the hardest, man in the world. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want nobody twisted down the street either.
Okay. Have you ever had a high publicized butch queen relationship with someone from the ballroom scene?
Years ago, and I would, you know, that was the first, and that was the last, as far as dealing with a person.
Who was it?
Oh, I used to go with Whitney.
Whitney Mugler?
Mm-hmm.
The one with the face?
Yes.
See, you learn something every day. I didn't know that. Okay. That was
years.
And how long were you guys together?
Not long at all, because the boy was 6 years, because it was a whole lot. I'm saying, you go out, you got, I remember one night we was out in tracks, and I had this photographer do a whole fucking photo session and shit. So, I mean, it was a lot.
Yeah. All right. How many times have you been up in drags, and what was your name?
Well, it was 3 times.
Okay, and what was the boy? Where was that?
Oh, well, actually 4 times. The first time was for the Halloween, for the masquerade ball that the Revlon had in 1990 that was in Baltimore. And the second time was for the Revlon ball that was in Jersey, where it was a masquerade ball too, and all my judges. The judges had to change places. If you was a femme queen, you had to come as a boy, and if you was the butch queen, you had to get up in them.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And then the 2 times that I won grand, the grand prize at the Mugler Ball in 2001,
mm-hmm.
and then the grand prize for the 5,000 when I was on Kadar Malone's Secret Weapon. So yeah, those 4.
Oh, so you actually had a part of the $5,000 club?
Yeah, I was Kadar's Secret Weapon for the $5,000 for the best dress with the Secret Weapon.
Okay, that's cute. So I have a little bit more of an intimate question to ask you. How many people, you've been out for a very, very long time, how many people would you say on your hand would you have lost to the HIV/AIDS virus? And how do you feel about how that disease has attacked the young community today?
Yo, Nicole, on that subject, I can't even count that on my hand because I've lost so many. You know what I'm saying? In the ballroom and, you know, personal friends outside the ballroom. So I mean, it's been many. You know what I'm saying? It's been many. I think it's really affecting the newer generation even more, because even though there's a whole lot of education out there, but it just seems like they are not listening. You know what I'm saying? It just seems like they just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if that comes with, you know, if that also comes with, you know, the people that's, you know, running their houses. See, that's that's where it comes a part of being these mothers and these fathers in these houses. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of this stuff that you need to be instilling into your kids as far as them, you know, going to be tested, or just sit down with them and have, like, really talks with them. Because, you know, the newer generation is definitely totally different. You know, we got to realize that I had to realize that the new generation that's out now, you know, these are the babies that stem from teenage pregnancies and mothers that was on drugs heavily, you know what I'm saying, crackheaded mothers and stuff, you know. So a lot of these kids really do, you know, were born into this world actually with some kind of problem.
Probably.
And I've
sure.
met a whole
right.
lot of them, you know.
Right.
A lot of them really have, yeah, a lot of them really have fucking issues.
Yes, I have myself, yes.
You know, and a lot of us, you know, we don't take, you know, we might look at ourselves and, you know, and be like, you know, okay, well, that's not an issue that I have. So since that's not my issue, I don't give a fuck about, you know, what they
right.
might be going through or whatever. Instead of, you know, sitting down, you know, and actually, you know, getting to see where these kids is coming, you know, to really get to see where these kids is coming from. Because it's not all about that y'all taking kids to your house just for them to walk balls. Especially if you're saying that these are your kids. Like I said, sometimes these kids need you to actually sit down and talk to them. Listen to
right.
what they, you know, listen to what they have to say. Know where, because if, how can you say this is your child and you don't even know them?
Message, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You need to
message.
Know, you need to know, you really
mm-hmm.
need to know them.
Message, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's a sad thing because, yo, especially now with these kids, I mean, look, man, you have the kids that's dying at 20 and 21, okay? They have not even begun to even live their life. You know what I'm saying? These kids, you got kids, they just come out of school and find out that they are having full-blown AIDS and the whole nine yards.
If you had a message that you would like to give out to the young community that are looking forward in it or trying to enter into the ballroom scene or just out there being just random gay people in the village or wherever it is that they're at right now, what would be your message to them?
My main message to them is, listen, sweeties, honey, do not try to get a name the wrong way. Okay, that's my main message. Do not try to get a name the wrong way, and which I mean by that, because I know a lot of these kids in the ballroom, they feel, okay, well, if I speak with this person, or did it, listen, you have to realize that you, number one, you have got to take care of you. You have to,
mm-hmm.
that's the first thing you have to do. You have to take care of you. You have to believe in yourself. You have to love yourself, because if you don't love yourself, no one else is. Half of these people in the boardroom and shit don't give a fuck about you. Trust me. Believe me, regardless of me being an icon or whatever, okay, I know there's people who do not give a fuck about me, but I don't dwell on that. I take care of Stuart. I wake up every morning. I thank God for giving me another day, giving me air to breathe, okay, for me to take care of myself. You know what I'm saying? If you do not believe in yourself, no one else will. And you have to believe in yourself. That's the first start. You have to think about you. Don't do things to appease other people because, you know, when it's all said and done, shit, they'll kick you to the curb. You know what I'm saying? They'll kick you to the curb. You know what I'm saying? And if you're a person that don't believe in yourself, you wouldn't know which way to go. You know what I'm saying? You got to be able to stand on your own. You have to be able to stand on your own feet. Because listen, yo, we are definitely living in a dog-eat-dog world. Okay?
Mm.
Everybody's about self.
Mm. Well, that's truly a message, and like I want everybody that listens to the show and that's on the show, I like for all the people that I'm interviewed to give a message, and that was a real strong message. So pay attention to yourself and let alone trying to just get a name. So what do you feel about the leaders that are having the children and are manipulating the children, and what do you say to them, Baxter? How do you feel about that, and what do you say to them?
I mean, you know what? That's a sad situation too. If that's your way of, you know, if that's y'all's way of, you know, getting a date or whatever, I kind of think that that's kind of, you know, like kind of fucked up. But then on the other hand, I also will fault the person because you shouldn't settle. You know, you shouldn't put yourself a scene to the side because if sleeping with somebody is what's going to get you a name, then, bitch, I'd rather not have a name, if that's going to be the case. Okay, especially if you sleep with somebody and you know you you know what I'm saying, you don't have no feelings for them, or you're not even attracted to them like that, or you just doing it because they done promised you, oh, you know, you speak with me, you know, next month, bitch, they'll be calling you a statement or whatever the case shall be, whatever, you know, whatever storylines they give them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you say to the mothers and fathers that are doing it, you know, that, you know, they're sitting there and they manipulating them, and, you know, what would you say to them in both terms? I wanted what you would say to the child, and what would you say to the leader? So I want that one, too.
I mean, as far as the leader is concerned, I mean, the only thing I would say to them is that I feel that, you know, that in a way that, you know, you should kind of be ashamed of yourself, because the fact that these kids have come to your house is because they want that mother or they want that father's figure. So, I mean, if, you know, and so I know that throws a lot. I mean, because I've heard from the kids before, you know, to tell me, oh, you know, they didn't stay in the house because, you know, this person was trying to have them or that person was trying to have them. So that discourages, you know what I'm saying, so that discourages the kid, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you should think about, you know, what are you doing as far as when you're running these houses? Because then y'all want to ask yourselves, you know, why is kids leaving and stuff? Because, you know, I know one of the main things I hear from the kids is they feel that, you know, once that happens, they feel that, you know, the mother, the father has now disrespected them, you know, or they feel that this is, you know, that's the only reason why you actually wanted them in your house is because you wanted to have them. It was not so much that you saw them, you know, to be in your house like that.
Right. Right.
So, you know.
Go ahead.
So, you know, so now that puts them in a whole, you know, thinking in mind, you know, like, okay, you know, well, I wasn't actually good enough to be in their house. I was, you know, I was just going to be a piece. You know, and so with that in mind, you know, as far as the kid is, you know, kids is concerned, you know, like I said, whatever house, if this is the house, you know, if you're going into a house, like I said, you got to go into the house with, you know, what are you trying to get, you know, what are you trying to get out of it? You know what I'm saying? Are you a weak person that, you know, because like I'm saying, you know, kids are different. You know, everybody's different. Everybody comes with a different story, a different background. You know what I'm saying? You got people who, you know, are looking for love. You know what I'm saying? They searching for it. So that's an easy prey. You know what I'm saying? That person would be an easy prey, you know. So on that, you know, so basically, like on that note, you know, that's kind of a iffy situation. But in the long run, half the time, 9 out of 10 times, it doesn't work. It eventually causes confusion.
Confusion. Okay, well, me speaking as a mother, I say that you are rocking a goner, and that's tired to manipulate a child into giving and promising them something just to sleep with them and to fulfill your own sexual perverted sexual needs or whatever. That's not what this is about. You are built to be a mother to lead and guide, and I think that you are supposed to know your child personally every day and whatever it is that they're doing because you are their mother. You said earlier that you brought Andre out into the scene and stuff like that. What is your intake, or what would be, if you would like to give a little, just what is your opinion about how he has been being attacked and the things that he has also have to been going through in the ballroom within the past 2 years? As far as the Atlanta, the Chanel, you know, just all the different things that Andre has to have been part of, as the losing with him and Kelly and all of the different embarrassment. How do you feel about that, being so close of a friend to Andre?
I mean, well, in a, I mean, okay. It's like, oh, it's a whole lot, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like a whole lot with that because, I guess maybe that happens when you put yourself out there and you know what I'm saying, and you deal with a whole lot, you know, you deal with a whole lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I mean, I've heard, you know, certain people's sides of whatever their story is, you know, and certain, you know, certain, you know, certain parts of their stories, you know, I can actually, you know, relate to. And, you know, it's just a situation, I guess, you know, it's kind of a situation that, you know, that Andre has, you know, gotten into. And the only thing I can say that I've said that Andre should just say, you know, Andre just needs to address it. You know, so I guess that, you know, hopefully one day, you know, if you be able to get him on the show, whatever the case should be, that he'll be able to address, you know,
okay,
a lot of the problems that, you know, have been coming his way within, like, in the last years. You know, I do know that one of the main things was about $1,000 that time. For that, you know, for that Vogue thing, I know there's like a whole lot of people that was like really, 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 really upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, like I said, I think that was, you know, me personally, if that was me in that situation, I would have actually addressed that immediately instead of letting it get so out of hand.
Okay.
But, you know, then his situation with Kelly and them, I think, you know, personally, I think that's something that's personal. That's something, you know, that he's going to have to deal with, you know, that they need to, you know, because I personally can't, because I don't know what, you know, no one really knows what really happened. Because all I know is, you know, at one time they were always real close, and then now y'all are not. So, you know, so I guess that's a situation that they need to deal with.
Okay. Okay, well, we're going to take a little moment, and we're going to pay some bills. If you're on the phone lines, you have any questions, I see you in the chat room now. If y'all people have any questions or y'all like any statements or to pay homage to the pioneer icon, Stuart Ebony Revlon, press 1. My questions are running out. You know, I'll move it on. Stuart has a life, and so do I. So if you're listening to the interview and you like to join in or make a statement, pay some homage or whatever, please feel free to come on the phone line and say what it is that you would like to say. We're going to go pay some bills, and callers, you should be pressing 1. Stay right there, Stuart, with us.
Eva and Deja. Deja and Eva 707 present The Unforgettable Ball Part 3, November 19th, 2011. Over $7,500 in cash prizes. The first time in the Midwest, paying tribute to the ones before us. Grand prizes. Butch Queen Face, $1,000. Sun Queen Face, $1,000. Realist with a Twist, $600. Sun Queen Performance, $1,000. Butch Queen Performance, $1,000. Butch Queen Runway, $1,000. Best Dress, $200. Entrance, $25 all night. All tables, $100. Up front, $150 at the door. 313 Jefferson Street, Dayton, Ohio. Deja and Eva, Eva and Deja, 007 present. The Unforgettable Ball, Part 3.
Okay, welcome back. If you're just joining us, we are having the most exclusive interview with the pioneer icon, Stuart Revlon Ebony. This is the For Real Show, my sector of my life. And, of course, this is a platform where people can come on and give their story and their history and also pass a message to the ballroom community and the ballroom and just the gay community as a whole out there. So if you're on the phone line and you want to join this conversation and you have a question or something you'd like to know, please feel free to press 1 and we will be bringing you back on the phone line. So at any given time, you don't, but I'm going to continue to move forward. So, Stuart, at what time did you move to Atlanta? How did that all come about? So you moved to New York and you went to Philly, and then you ended up in Atlanta for a very long time. What year did you move
to Atlanta? I moved to Atlanta in 97.
Okay. And when you was in Atlanta, was there like a ballroom scene going on, like fab?
Well, I already came, like the ballroom, they had a ball down here, and that's, and they asked me to come down here, asked me before I moved. It was the House of Scholars, the House of Scholars ball.
Mm-hmm.
They had a ball down here one year, and I came to their ball, which their ball was extremely, really, really, really nice for a ball that was, like the first ball that was in the South. And, you know, so they made sure, like, you know, I was there, Tony Malone with me. You know, they made sure they had, you know, some top profile people that was in the ballroom that was, you know, that was present.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved here in 97, and at that particular time, Makuta Chanel was down here, and Makuta was giving, like, mini balls between Makuta and the Scholars. They were the ones that were, like, giving mini balls and stuff like that. Then I came onto the scene, and I started throwing balls. And then basically, like, when I started throwing balls, that's when a lot of the New York kids, you know, the New York kids and the out-of-town, like, a lot of the out-of-town kids up north started coming to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because at one time, you know, then, you know, one time, Atlanta had, like, some of the, you know, was having, like, some of the best balls.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so at what time was Atlanta actually getting up off the road when it started pumping? Like, what year was that before when it was, like, really out there and everybody was coming there and
like,
being there?
Like, what, 99? Like, yeah, like 99, 2000, that's, you know, it was really getting hot.
Okay, and did you basically go there and open up, put the House of Ebony on the map?
Well, I can't, you know, well, the House of Ebony was already being represented by Jahard. Jahard was down here on his own, basically, like, representing the House of Ebony. Then when I came and me and him teamed up, we put a house together, and that's how the House of Ebony, as a house, became known in Atlanta and put on the map with the direction that came with me and Jahard.
And how has it so, I mean, do you like Atlanta? How has it changed your life? Like, how long?
I really like Atlanta. I mean, I really like Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? I mean, as far as, you know, it gets, you know, I've been on my job in Atlanta for, you know, for a good time now, over like 7 years. So, you know, it's been good for me. It's definitely been good for me.
Okay, that's good. That's good. All right, so now that you're in Atlanta and stuff, do you come out to balls and do you participate and stuff like that? It's a lot of
very seldom. It's like if I go to somebody's ball, it would be a ball. It would be a person's ball who I feel deserve my presence at.
Okay,
I
had a question.
I'm not gonna just go to anything.
I had a question from the chat room. What is your spiritual foundation?
My spiritual foundation? Well, actually, I was raised up as a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, okay. Jehovah's Witness.
That's my family. That's why I was actually born and raised as Jehovah's Witness. I didn't get baptized, so I'm not a Jehovah's Witness. You know, as I got older, that was, you know, I didn't get back, like, civilize my dedication to being a Jehovah's Witness. But that's what I was raised as, and that's what my whole family is, Jehovah's Witness.
Jehovah's Witness. So how do you feel about the ballroom today in Atlanta, and do you feel that it's separated from the ballroom as a whole?
The ballroom in Atlanta now definitely has changed tremendously. I mean, it has definitely become girlfriend-ish. I mean, because, I mean, I've been to some balls in Atlanta, and you just gag at, like, I mean, you're gagging who's in the Jets fan, or you gagging the people that win. You just, I mean, it's just one of those. So a lot of balls in Atlanta, I just basically, you know, a lot of Atlanta, like I said, if it's not a person that I know, yeah, I know they did their thing in the ballroom scene, and this is my way of me coming to their ball and pay homage to them. Other than that, I just, you know, I'll sit those out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And who are some of the your favorite people out there in Atlanta, which would be your show-stopping people out there?
Oh, well, of course, your show-stopping people here, is, I would say one is definitely Kadon Milan.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Fred Chanel.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I mean, some of the people that helped put the land on the map. I was definitely saying like Raquel Balenciaga, and I was thinking Dee Dee Chanel and Starsha Gasson.
Would these also be some of the favorite people in the ballroom for you today?
Some of my favorites as far as the land is concerned, yeah.
What about in the ballroom as a whole?
At the ballroom as a whole, I mean, there's a lot of people in the ballroom as a whole that I definitely, I mean, I'm a fan, I mean, not just me, I'm a fan of excuse me. I'm a fan of Hava Balenciaga. I love what Miss Sanaya brought to the ballroom. I love what Miss Ashley went to the ballroom. There's a lot of people that I really, you know, pay homage to. You don't have the time, all the time the ball to say to a person, oh, I really see you, or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of ballroom superstars.
Okay, and what about the new kids today?
Well, as far as new kids today, I mean, I have, the guy from the house Mugler, it's a shame that I'm forgetting what this boy's name is, but he's definitely one of them. Oh, Exotic. I think he's definitely one of the people that represents faith to the fullest right now. I think he's like, he's definitely like one of my number one picks.
Okay.
Like a lot of times at the balls, lately, some of the categories I don't even look at, so that's why I can't really tell you about a whole lot of people.
Right. And you don't come out of the balls like that like you used to and everything. Could we look forward to even seeing you in the future coming to, some of the balls or some of the balls that may count?
Oh, yeah. Only to the balls that's going to count, that will count. Will you see me come back? You will not see me come to DJ Bubble Function. No, I won't.
No, and you're also willing to travel from state to state.
Oh yeah, I mean, because there's people from state to state that did their thing. I mean, you realize I've been from state to state. I went to the balls and walked the balls and won the balls in every major state that had balls. So, I know people from all those states that did their thing too. So, I've been at balls in Philadelphia and places like that.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess y'all all can look forward to seeing the Pioneer Stewart Ebony at, the balls that he feels that is suitable. Are you in a relationship now?
No, I haven't been in a relationship in years.
Oh, and you said in years.
Oh, yeah, I said, no, I haven't been in a relationship in years.
And does you like? Are you more of a loner? Are you into relationships, or you're just more of a loner?
Well, at this present time, I'm more of a loner. I'd rather be. Let me tell you, especially in Atlanta, I don't see the kids in their relationships, and if that's what y'all call relationships, then I'd rather be the loner.
If you had something, okay, callers, if you're on the phone line and you have something else to say, we're about to wind down and get up out of here. If you want to come on the phone line, pay your homage, or if you know something that I missed and you would like to ask a question or statement, please feel free to press 1 now and get up on this phone line, because I'm definitely about to end this interview and move right along and prepare myself for the next interview, which will be Tony Revlon. Once again, I want to take the time out to say thank you so much for coming up here. I see a lot of people, they have all the questions that they're sending over and everything, but you command a certain type of atmosphere just with your voice alone. So, some people are intimidated to come and ask their questions, or they may not feel that they asked the right question, but that always works out fine. But I want to personally thank you for coming up on the show and giving me all the details for things and stuff that, you have been involved with, and if you played the part in, and your opinions and everything. I greatly appreciate it. And I pay homage to you and all the concrete that you have placed on the ground before us so that we all can walk and move forward. So if you're on the phone line and you'd like to come up on here and pay homage to the legendary icon pioneer, the person who basically was there, definitely press 1. My first call is 347-432, Oberoi Ivisu, Kiana Ivisu, the mother, you're on the line.
Hey, Nicole, how you doing? Hey, Stuart,
$10,000 winner.
Hey, Kiana,
I'm sorry,
$2,000
winner.
I'm doing good. I'm doing very good. First of all, I'm calling to applaud you as well, just like I always tell everybody else. For the people that paved the way for me, I personally want to thank you for all you have done, and I speak your name too as well. And also, just thank you for just being you, because I remember it was a time when I was a Revlon back in my early days, and you gave me the vote and James and all y'all to put me in the house, because you had to win a trophy to get into the house, because Revlon was so, you know, shady back in the day, in the early day. And I just want to just thank you just for being you, for being honest and just being who you are, and continue to do what you do. And the message that you gave tonight, I just hope that everybody take heed on the message that you gave, because it's absolutely true. And once people start learning to listen and learning to live by it, things will be so much better, I feel, as far as ballroom and beyond. But once again, Stuart, thank you for what you do, and I love you so, so much, and keep being you, and I'll see you soon. Good night.
Thanks, Kiana. Thank you, baby.
That was the icon, the overall mother, Kiana Ivisu. Girl, I want to know what you did with that money. She just got $2,000, darling, for Team Realness at What's in the Name, honey. She should be loaded.
Okay,
my next caller is 240-432. You live on the air.
How you doing, guys? Hi, Nicole. I'm Richard Balenciaga. Hello, Stuart. How you doing tonight?
This is who?
This is Richard Balenciaga.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Stuart, you don't remember me. I got your name, but by face-wise, we had a couple conversations, but you always, you know, gave me the utmost. And the last conversation we had was about 3 years ago in Atlanta when I walked the ball and I sent, you know, a whole entire house for Twist. And I know you're not a big performance person, you know, but for you to pull me to the side and tell me, this is how you do it, this is how you make your name, that meant a lot to me.
Oh, thank you.
This is like 3 years ago, and I haven't seen you since then, but, you know, I just want to say thank you, because every time I walked your balls back in the early 2000s in Atlanta, I've always did well, but, like, you know, those words helped me. You know, helped me in those couple of years as far as my ballroom career.
I'm glad it did.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. That was so nice. If you're on the phone, thank you, caller, for calling in. We put you back in the queue. If you're on the phone line, press 1. You have something to say. You want to pay some homage, because we up out of here in about 5 to 10 minutes. So if you need to get on this phone line and you want to be a part of this exclusive interview with the pioneer, and as homage as I feel, then press 1 and we'll definitely bring you up on this phone line. For the people, for the young children, the people that's, you know, because there's a lot to it of 17 and 18 years old. And I myself have deal with a lot of young kids who are sick at that time and who does come from all the dysfunction in this family. Family and stuff like that. If you had a message to give to them about them proceeding into the ballroom scene today and them doing whatever they need to do, what would be your message for them, the young children, the children that are under 21?
Well, I would hope that they would search and find and cling to someone that is going to just basically that's going to lead them more to a positive, way of living. As far as, you know, hopefully they'll find someone who basically like really has they self together, you know, a person that they own a part, you know, who takes care of themselves, they work every day and something, somebody who's going to be a real good role model for them. Because, you know, at that age, you know, 17, 18, coming to the ballroom, you are easy to be influenced. You know, my main, you know, message to them is try to find somebody who, you know, that they can really learn something from, you know, in a positive way. So, you know, and basically if they do that, you know, it'd be more of a, like, you know, a brighter outcome for them.
Okay. That's, I definitely think that that's a positive things. And a message to all your peers and leaders that are out there directing and running the ballroom today and that are put in position to lead the children. What would be a message that you'd like to send to them?
Okay, my message, and this is going to be my last final thing that I have to say, okay? I am a firm believer. Many people say many things, and I mean they say many things. I'm a firm believer in action speaks louder than words. So with that, people can stop calling me and saying, or asking me, is this person a legend? Is this person this person that? Have you seen their actions? You know what a person, like I said before, we all know what gives a person status. Okay, if this person is supposed to be a legend, then you should know what they have. You should know what they have done. So, like I said, we're gonna leave on the note with action speaks louder than words. A person can say whatever they want to say. They can say they this, they can say they that, but it's all gonna show in their actions. And to set all matters straight, with being icon, legend, or whatever, I am one of the people. That the only thing I'm going to leave with is that I am who they say I am. And I'm going to leave it on that note.
Oh, well, thank you, Stuart, so much for coming on the show. And thank you for keeping it as real as possible and answering all my questions. And I know I've took up enough of your time for tonight. I greatly appreciate it. You all have heard it here, the pioneer icon, Stuart Revlar Ebony, and you heard it. And now you are to look forward to the next pioneer icon that I will be bringing on the radio show and the one after that. If you are out there and you are young and like everything that Stuart is saying, please pay attention. It is somebody who has been around for a very long time, and what they are saying can actually lead you in a better direction in your life. And it can appoint, it may have something to do with your life at the present time. So pay attention, because it's definitely a message. And if you're having sex and you out there tonight and you're having a ball, use condoms. That high shit, I'm high and we carried on, don't let it work, because then, you know, you can mess up your life in just a matter of seconds of just being high. Thank you for listening to my show. I am the Barbara Walters of Tinsel Chop. Thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you guys all back here next Wednesday on Tinsel Chop. Stuart, thank you very much, and thank all the listeners out there. God bless you, and have a wonderful day. Little B.